All right, here we go. Episode 43. Couple of items here. No more background music. A couple of followers said, hey, love the podcast, love the stories, but take that out. So, boom, it's gone. I thought it was kind of annoying when I finally listened to one of my episodes. So that's gone, which is good. I'm trying to post every Friday. This is posting today because it didn't upload for whatever reason. The app that I use Anchor. Got bought by Spotify, and I don't know what happened in between there, but it's up there now. I'm trying to post once or twice a week. And these are all personal stories from my time in the military, time out there, just adventuring around, being a stupid kid. The inspiration for all this was maybe my great-grandkids can listen to this and say, wow, he really screwed up a lot, did some cool things. And learn a few things from all this. So here we go. The next episode. This one is titled Trapped 900 Feet Underwater. So to start this off, we got to go way back. Rewind 1999. I'm in the SEAL team, obviously. Second platoon. And this is before the war, gang. Okay, so there's not much going on. Our platoon was going to go west, meaning Guam, Australia. Not a lot of excitement, but a lot of fun. During that deployment, we got to hang out with SAS and do some great, great operations, as well as drink a ton of beer and have a lot of fun in Australia. In Guam, not so much fun, but anyway, we are doing what's called dry deck shelter operations, which is on board a submarine. And the submarine at the time was called the USS Kamehameha. And it's a nuclear submarine. And on the top of it, if you can imagine, there's this huge dry deck shelter. Now, if you want to pause and kind of look up what that is, it's basically a way for us to lock out of the submarine, either using the SEAL delivery vehicle, the small little submersible, or we can launch Zodiacs out of there. From underwater when the submarine is at periscope depth, which is about 60 feet underwater. And so there's two of the shelters on the back of the submarine. And our platoon was deployed on the Kamehameha. So what does that mean to deploy on the submarine? Well, you're on the submarine until you're doing operations off of the submarine. So in transit, you're on the submarine, and as you can imagine, not much for us to do, even though they tried to get us to do, you know, learn the submarine operations and things like that. We're kind of getting our gear ready in transit from Hawaii to Guam and then Guam to Australia. It's a long ways, right? So in order to kind of get ready for this deployment and get on the submarine, there's a lot of packing up to do. And the submarine has all sorts of these vertical missile tubes, and a lot of them don't have missiles in them, and they store gear in there. We put our gear in there. We got to load up our submersibles, the SDV. We got about 30, maybe a little bit less, 30 guys with us. Not all SEALs. We have divers with us as well, because they are in charge of all the diving operations to lock back into the submarine, to get out of the submarine. There's a whole host of things that happens when you're doing these kind of things off the submarine. As you can imagine, it's a big operation. And so it's probably an entire week of loading up, getting everything in there, because it's not just simply throw it on there. You got to load it down into these hatches, sometimes through multiple hatches that are watertight, and these things are all open. And we're not used to being on the submarine a lot, like submariners, right? That are on there all the time. And so we're bonking our head and smashing our fingers, and it's a slow operation getting all of your gear onto the boat. So what are we loading on the boat? We're loading all of our gear that we're going to do SR operations, search and reconnaissance. We're going to do all of our diving operations. We're going to go from the Zodiac over the beach and do link up with the SAS in Australia. I mean, we're loading everything for many, many months out on the submarine and doing other things. So as you can imagine, we have ordnance we got to load on there. So these different tubes have are designated for us to store different things in. Now, some of them store our engines for our Zodiacs, 55 horsepower and 35 horsepower engines. Those all have to be taken apart just down to the engine itself, and we have to kind of crane it into the missile tube. And these things open up vertically from the top. So if you're looking at the top of the submarine, these things would open like you see on the movies where the hatch opens straight up and you could look directly, it's vertically down into the tube. And it's a long ways. You don't want to fall into this tube. You would definitely severely injure yourself. So we're loading, we got to load up the whole week. It's just long days of getting all the gear, everything you need. And we're passengers on this, on the boat, as we call it, but there's still a rank structure on the boat, right? There's a captain, executive officer, all the crew. There is chief of the boat, the senior enlisted, guy on the boat. And there are also mariners. They have a job to do. And, we are passengers, and yeah, we do missions off the boat, but we got to coordinate together how we're doing all this. And so there's a lot of mission planning that goes on when we do these kind of things. It's a big operation. I mean, it takes a long time. Anyway, so let's fast forward a little bit. We've loaded up. We've gone out over to Guam. There's a few stories there that are pretty funny. Diving on old shipwrecks and things like that. And then we're off to, Australia. And, now when we are close to where we need to go, along the way we do just training operations, right? It really sucks just to sit on the boat and not do anything. The crew isn't too stoked about having a bunch of SEALs on board because, well, we eat a lot of food. We don't really help out much with anything, and we sleep all day. We work out, and then we mess with our gear and we go back to sleep. So, there's not a lot of camaraderie there, and we're a pretty tight knit group. So you can imagine, we got along fine, but, when operations start happening where we're working at night, we're up all night and they're trying to sleep. They're doing their thing with the boat. And so anyway, I'd like to say there's a little bit of fun friction there, you know, let's make fun of them. They make fun of us kind of thing. But, the training operations that we were doing at the time, it's called dry deck shelter operations. And that is, operations where we would deploy our SDV, the SEAL delivery vehicle, the little mini sub, and we'd also deploy the Zodiacs. And so two different operations, but at the same time, we would just do multiple runs of those. And those things take a long time. If you can imagine the team, we got to get up into the dry deck shelter, get all the gear ready, and then you have to flood the dry deck shelter, which is a massive space to flood and equalize the pressure. And then the big doors open up on the back, and then we got to pull all of our gear out, whether it's the submersible, and the divers are helping with this, of course, or it's the Zodiacs, which we would pull out underwater while the submarine's at periscope depth, kind of cruising along, and we would inflate them underwater and they would shoot to the surface and inflate. And so, we would practice that whole thing because, the submarines, it's got to hold a certain hover underwater, periscope depth. And sometimes it wouldn't, sometimes it would kind of lose its, what it's called losing its bubble a little bit. And it would drop a little bit deeper than it's supposed to. And if we are out in the water column, too long, there might be some, decompression issues, that sort of thing. And we did practice emergency, bailout. If the submarine lost its bubble and it took a dive, well, you got to get off of that submarine or you're going to go down with it. You're going to blow your drums and it's not going to be good for you. So after doing a lot of these training iterations where We're deploying the SEAL delivery vehicle, we're recovering it, closing everything up, and then doing it again, or doing the Zodiac operation I talked to you about. We recover all that, and each time we would put all the gear back away. Sometimes the submarine would come to the surface, and then we'd pull all the gear out on the submarine and we'd go through everything. As you imagine, salt water is not good for electronics and not good for engines and all sorts of things. So there was a lot to do to clean up, get everything fitted back where it needed to be. And everything takes a long time on a submarine. I mean, there's no fast way to do things. And you gotta make sure everything's locked up and good to go, because you're going back underwater and you don't want things to go wrong. And so this particular day, we had just finished up deploying the Zodiacs. I remember one of them had flipped over. We had to flip it back over on the surface, and it was just a big mess. And so the submarine came to the surface, and we pulled all of our gear out, and we had to stow everything back away because we were going to go on a couple day transit, meaning nothing was going to happen. We needed to get to a certain location, and there wasn't going to be anything going on for the dry deck shelter. And so we were going to kind of stow everything away and secure it. And there's a certain code word for that in the submarine community. I don't know. I can't remember now what it is, but it was just like, hey, we need to lock everything down. And so we went through all of that. We started putting away all of our gear bags, all of our diving gear. We had to kind of lower the engines back down inside the missile tubes and just tie everything up and make sure everything was secure. That way it'd be good to go for the next couple days. Batteries that need to be recharged. It's kind of a procedure for everything on the submarine. It's just important, right? Irritating sometimes, but it's important. Anyway, we'd locked everything up. And so down inside the submarine, there's access to the missile tubes through a hatch. As you, if you can imagine, probably you've seen them on the movies, or maybe some of you have been on the submarine. It's the hatch with the wheel on it and has all these teeth around the side. And you would spin that wheel and a big heavy door would close and we would spin it and it would be locked. Like, it is locked tight. You're not going back in or not coming out. If you get back in, it's kind of a process, and for good reason, right? You need the place watertight. So, everybody got back into the submarine. We got down to the bottom. We're closing up all the tubes on the bottom and locking those doors and spinning them and kind of tagging them out, meaning, hey, this one has been locked and secured. It's good to go. And we've done this tons of times. It went pretty smooth this time. Anyway, so we locked everything up and we're underway. The submarine is, you can't really, I guess you can tell when it goes down underwater, but it's not like it's a steep dive and, you know, Red October kind of thing. It's kind of underwater in it. And you never really, or at least I didn't really ever know what depth we were cruising at. It felt like we were just below the surface, but there was a depth kind of meter that would click over by where my bed was, which is basically a coffin. Kind of have to slide in there sideways, and there's no room to just lay on your back. You could hardly turn sideways. Anyway, there was a little meter for whatever reason, and I could see it. And I remember passing by, and I'd happen to look at it from time to time. And we were a couple hundred feet underwater. An hour later, we were 500 feet under, and I don't know why we travel at the depth that we do. Don't really care. What's on my mind is, hey, I need to kind of get my gear ready. I need to get together with my team, because the next kind of operation that we were planning, I was going to be in the back of this STV with another teammate of mine. And we kind of had to figure some stuff out with gear between each other and kind of get ready for it. And so that was on my mind. I wanted to work out. I wanted to eat and get some sleep was the goal for me anyway. Anyway, a few hours had passed by, and I remember walking by this little meter again, and it clicked down another couple hundred feet. And I remember looking at it like, wow, 900 feet. I wonder why we are at 900 feet. And I wonder what would happen if water just came in here. Like, I'm sure it'd be instantly devastating, but kind of things go through my mind. I was kind of irritated that the fact that this meter was next to my bed and I would stare at it. And because then you don't, like I said, you don't know how deep you are. You can kind of hear things happening to the whole of the submarine. But amidst all, everything else is going on, whether people taking showers or passing by you in the, in what you would consider a hallway, which not really is. There's a lot of other noises happening. Cool thing that many of you may not know is one of the missile tubes we had turned into a jacuzzi. The bottom of it, we had pumped in hot water, and we could open up this missile tube, get in, and there was about 4.5 feet of hot water in there. And we made that our personal secret jacuzzi. I don't think the chief of the boat was very happy about that. Anyway, after I got some food, which is its own circus on a submarine, it's actually pretty good food, but where you sit is important. I didn't know this as a SEAL. We don't have assigned seatings, but there's certain places the nukes sit and certain places that only the chiefs sit. And of course, us being jerks, we just sit wherever we want. We don't know, right? But we're kind of messing up the system. But the food is generally pretty good. And they do movie night on the submarine and things like that. But after I got some food, I linked up with my other teammate that we were going to be doing this operation in a couple of days. So we needed to kind of get some gear together. And the gear happened to be by the missile tubes that the rest of our gear was in. But our gear is kind of the gear that we were wearing, because we had to bring some mission specific gear, some radios, some other things that were important for that operation. But I remember talking to him, and we were laughing about something or other. And it's usually about all the antics that happen on the submarine, like, hey, who's working out all day? Who sleeps all day? I was a medic, so, or a corpsman in the Navy, but it's basically a medic if you're an Army type. I carry a bunch of drugs, and I wasn't a very sensitive medic, meaning if your arm wasn't broken, don't come see me. But people came see me for sleep drugs and an IV if they got dehydrated or whatever. I had a med bag there and things like that. But anyway, so we had our gear kind of laid out across this working table. I remember we had to refit the batteries for the radios, and we had to get some stuff sealed up. And we actually used one of those, what are those machines that suck all the air out of something? You put food in there. I can't think of it right now, but you know what I'm talking about. We would put our clothes in there, because when we're doing operations where we're locking out of the sub, a lot of times we're in dry suits, but we want to change out into something else. And sometimes we'd wear a semi-dry suit, so you would get wet. And so I would have a change of clothes. And we would do this to other pieces of gear that we needed to keep dry. And you would suck all the air out of it, because, as you can imagine, an air bubble in there makes things very buoyant, and you don't want that, right? You want to make it neutral in the water. Anyway, we're taping up stuff. We're getting our weapons ready. We have this big list of things that we need to kind of get ready. Our draggers, our rebreathers, you got to fill those up with what's called soften alignment. It scrubs out the CO2. And I can remember hearing it for the first time, just a light, almost kind of a tapping noise, but it wasn't like tap, tap, tap. It was a little bit slower than that. It was tap, tap, tap. It's kind of like almost a drip, It was a little bit irritating, and I kind of brushed it off and got doing other things. Probably a half an hour had passed by, and I come back to the workstation and my teammates there, and then I hear it again, but it's a little bit louder. It's more like a loud thud. Dong, dong. like you're hitting a pipe against something and it's vibrating, right? And I look over at my teammate and I'm like, hey, do you hear something? And he looks at me and no, like instant answer, like he didn't even care. He just said no. and I'm like, ah, okay, whatever. And we're shuffling back and forth to where the gear is down the hall, back over in front of this one missile tube. And there it is again. And it's just a tad bit louder. Dong. Bong. Trying to make the noise, but that's what it sounded like. And I kind of elbowed him again. I said, do you hear that? Like, is that somebody working out downstairs with weights or something? What's going on? And he kind of stopped for a second, irritated. And that's when the noise, he heard it. Bong, bong. And we looked at each other and like, wow, what is that? Because it was obviously near us, but we couldn't discern where it was. I don't know if you ever had your phone go out, you're trying to search for your phone. It sounds like it's everywhere and you're looking for it. Like, what, where is that coming from? What, who, this is a noise you normally don't hear in a submarine. And so we're looking around for it a little bit and it's constant. Now we know where it is. And so we walk to the left a little bit down the hallway. The missile tubes are behind us. There's one, two, three, four of them behind us. Remember these missile tubes are, you know, 30 feet tall. They're, I don't know, 10 feet in diameter. So they're pretty large. We're walking by them. And then we kind of hone in on where the noise is coming from, and missile tube number 4. And we're like, whoa, that's where our gear is. And what's in missile tube number 4? I ask him, and we hear this noise. Bong, bong. And it doesn't really sink in what's going on, because the noise is foreign enough that we know it's something, but we don't know what it is. Inside missile tube number 4 is all of our outboard engines. We keep gas bladders in there, that sort of thing. A lot of just rugged equipment. There's oil in there. It's kind of wet and gnarly. And so I think at the same time, we both ask each other, what is that? And then we realize what it is. Somebody's in there. Somebody's in this missile tube. And we're 900 feet underwater. Holy shit. and we couldn't... Who the hell's in there? My teammate runs to get... our officer. There was another submarine guy kind of close to me. I said, hey, go get the officer on watch. We need to get this thing open. There's somebody inside the missile tube. Now, this is a big deal, okay? They've locked all the missile tubes, and you never open them without an emergency, but this is an emergency. Like, we have, obviously, somebody's hitting from the inside of the missile tube to get out. And we need to open up this thing. So everything kicks into gear. If a siren was there to go off, it would have went off. But we had 10 people in front of this missile tube within about 10 seconds. Our whole platoon, we figured out, hey, we're missing one of our teammates. We know who it is, and he's inside this tube. Officer of the watch comes down because he's the one who has to authorize to open this up. And he has to go through this checklist. And we're just like, hey, open the freaking thing up. We got to get this guy out of here. There's fumes in there. It's gnarly. Who knows how, I mean, he's been there for hours. My God. And we're all looking at each other like wide-eyed, like, oh my gosh, this is the craziest thing ever. We locked one of our own teammates in a missile tube. The submarine guys are looking at us like we played some ridiculous prank. Because the entire trip so far, we're a couple months in, besides sleeping and eating and working out, we're playing pranks on each other, okay? All sorts of gnarly pranks. If you think it up, we definitely did it, not only to each other, but to the crew. And they thought that we were hazing one of the new guys, like shove him in a missile tube and lock it up. No, that's not the case. That's too much, right? So they're looking at us, we're looking at each other like, oh, this is not good. And I know that our chief was looking around at us like, you little assholes are locking a new guy in the missile tube. Like, you guys are going to pay for this one. So anyway, they officer the watch. He does his checklist. He's as fast as he can. He spins this wheel. The banging stops because our teammate could hear this thing's opening up. And now, granted, he's been in there a number of hours. I don't know how many, but he's been swinging a huge metal pipe and hitting the door for a long time. And thank God we heard him, because God, who knows what could have happened. Anyway, the wheel spins, the door, this door is massive, it slowly opens. The crew is opening it. Myself, my teammate, we grab the wheel and are opening it as well. And at first, nothing happens. And I say at first, the first couple seconds, I mean, every time just slows down, because I'm like, what are we going to see here? And then, like a wet cat, our teammate just flies out of the missile tube and launches himself on my friend who's standing next to me, our teammate, in just a rage. Like, looks like he's covered in grease. He's been sweating for hours. He looks like a shipwrecked sailor, like bug eyes. Just crazy. And it just jumps on him and freaking out. Like, he thought that we played a prank. He thought that we locked him in there. And of course, we grab him, we pull him back. We're like, no, hey, man, everything's okay. Like, this is a total mistake. And we pull him off of the teammate, and we all start laughing, like, because he looks so crazy. His hair is like all greased back, and he smells like just diesel fuel. And I mean, it was a dangerous situation, but we're laughing about it. He looks so crazy. And we almost have to pin him up against the wall to, like, hey, bro, everything's okay. You're okay. No, we didn't do this on purpose. It would have been a really good prank, but you're all okay now. And it took him a while just to calm down. And just, like, he wouldn't even speak, because imagine yourself trapped inside of a missile tube. God knows when you're going to get out of this thing. And we're underway for however many days, and it smells really bad in there. It's I don't know how much oxygen is in there. I don't know how long he would have lasted. I guess we got to get into that thing in a couple of days, but thank God we heard that. The officer of the watch looks at us like we were just the biggest losers ever. Like, how did you lock up your own teammate in a freaking missile tube, you knuckleheads? And the commotion was over. Everybody kind of goes back. The chief of the boat comes out. He was a real asshole too. And of course, he has this over us now. Like, okay, we got to do safety training on proper locking out of a missile tube and not locking your teammate in there. Well, I guess they would call it shipmate. And we're like, okay. So for the next couple of days, we're sitting through all this training and learning how to properly inspect a missile tube, and that's being locked in a missile tube 900 feet underwater. Thankfully, he recovered from that, and it was a funny story from then on out. Like, thankfully, nobody got in serious trouble, because it was a pure accident. We did play a lot of crazy, evil pranks, but that wasn't one of them. We did continue on to Australia. Had a great time there with the SAS, and ended up coming back. Funny, on the way back, myself and that one teammate I'm telling you about, he was in charge of all the communications, radios, all that kind of stuff. I was a corpsman, and we were doing something on the Kitty Hawk, And the rest of the platoon was on the submarine, and they were due, we all were due to head back to Hawaii. It's kind of end of deployment. And we were just dreading this, like, oh my God, we got to get back on the submarine and go all the way back to Hawaii. Kill me already. And for whatever reason, we had to go on the Kitty Hawk. We had to do some communication stuff there. Lucky being a corpsman, I got to get off for a couple days, cruise around Australia. We got on the Kitty Hawk in Sydney, and we were to meet up with the Kamehameha submarine, and then helicopter back onto the submarine. Well, while we were on the Kitty Hawk, the day we're supposed to get on the submarine calls it off because the weather was too gnarly. It was pretty big sea state at that time. And hey, we know we can't load these guys on. You guys are just going to have to stay on there and go, because we're heading to Guam. And the submarine, I never forget it, just sinking underwater with the rest of our platoon. And my teammate and I look at each other, and we were just like, hell yes. We didn't have to ride on the submarine. And we hung out on the Kitty Hawk, which is a whole nother story in itself, with no job for like 3.5 weeks, getting lost on that thing, hanging out with the EOD guys all the way to Guam, and had a great time. Met the platoon back in Hawaii, which they were super sour and pissed at us. But that's the story of locking our teammate in a missile tube 900 feet underwater. Hope you enjoyed it.